You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about Jim Aparo. You know, that's right, folks. We're doing another artist spotlight, and we are looking at a true legend of the DC universe. And, you know, a lot of times you have artists that go cross between Marvel, DC, back and forth. This gentleman actually is mostly known for the work he's done at DC. And, you know, Jim Aparo, if you read comics anytime in the 1970s and 1980s, you've seen his work, especially on Batman. And it is just amazing. And he's also known as the artist who, you know, really brought Aquaman to life. And we thought it would be appropriate to talk all about Jim because Aquaman's coming to the big screen in about 2 weeks. And because of the work he did, you know, Aquaman got a movie. So it's actually pretty decent. And we got a great show otherwise with this too. And speaking of great things to talk about, let me bring my co-host on for this week. Let me welcome Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy.
How are you this week, sir?
Apparently, I'm a little bit under the weather. Well, it's that time of year, right?
Well, exactly. It's the time of the cough lodges.
You know? It really is.
It is, especially here in Atlanta, where one day it's in the 70s, the next day it's in the low 30s.
When they say deck the halls, they mean halls mentalyptus.
Exactly. And we're not being paid by them, so careful who you mention.
Yeah, I know, right? Ding.
Exactly. So, yes, you know, product placement. If you want to place your product here on the ESO Network or on Earth Station 1 itself, please write us at ESO. No, just kidding. Just kidding. So, yeah, you know, it'd be great to, you know, be able to get some money like that. But, yeah, who knows? Someday. You know, it's not like, you know, hi, I'm just here with my, you know, sleep number bed and talking to you right from it, you know, or, you know, hey, I just bought Judy 1-800-Flowers, you know, we could start someday be able to do that kind of stuff. You guys would get so sick of it, wouldn't you? I think I'm sick of it already. What do you think? So yeah, I'm just rambling tonight. It's just one of those type of nights, the holiday season, you know, everything's just, you know, supposed to be bright and jolly, and it's just frippin' cold here in Georgia tonight. So we're just chatting and we're going to have a great time. So we definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Definitely would love to hear what you have to say about the show. Please, as we always like to say, at this time of the year, we'd love to get some support from you at home. You know, you could do it many different ways. You could do it just by going to any of your media players and give us a rating of 5 stars. We would really appreciate it. We're up on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're now on Spotify. That's right. Earth Station 1 is up on Spotify, and you can listen to us there, or you could listen to us on the Android app, or you could listen to us on Google. You know, Earth Station 1 is, you know, on most media players now, and we're also up on most social networks. And, you know, definitely join in the conversation. We have a great group up on Facebook as the ESO Network, and we do have an Earth Station 1 page, and you can find all the recent episodes and stuff up there. So there's definitely areas to find us on. If you want to help support us financially, you know, we always have our Patreon, and we really do appreciate our patrons. And actually, we have a brand new episode of Ashley Pauls and Mike Gordon talking about movies up there this week. So Mike's been busy up there, and we're going to also probably by the time this weekend comes around, we will actually have another panel from Dragon Con. So definitely there's exclusive material available to our patrons. So look for it. And for as little as 25 cents a week, you can help support the ESO Network. And Earth Station 1 is included with that. So, you know, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO Network. Doesn't get much easier than that, folks. We really do appreciate it. All right. That's enough of me shilling for right now because, you know, I could talk about Amazon. I could also talk about TeePublic. But you know what? I want to talk to Mike. Let's see what's going on. We had some a pretty big preview drop this week. Let's get started talking about this with our rants and raves, and we are going to talk all about, ready for this, Avengers Endgame. We finally got even a title.
Yeah, we did. You know, obviously with the holiday movie season now in full effect, we're going to be knee deep in it starting next week. Watching movies, so we will be able to see a lot of trailers on the big screen in the coming weeks. But they've been releasing a lot of them on the small screen, or depending on how big your phone or tablet or actually your desktop computer screen is. You know, it's all relative. The biggest one, of course, is the Avengers Endgame, which is something that we've been waiting to see for months now. It's hard to believe that Avengers Infinity War like came out this year. It's been feels like such a long year. And this is, you know, the tone of the trailer is grim, of course. But it's got, you know, some of that little Marvel like magic in it. In my mind, they don't need to do any more advertising. Don't spend any more money on a marketing budget for this movie. Cause I'm there. Like, I just tell me when and where, and I'm there. That's all I need to know.
Oh, of course. You know, they didn't even have to put out a preview for this. People were going to be seeing it, you know, from the ending with the snap. And it's just like, you know, we're waiting to see what happens. And then even more so with having the ending of Ant-Man and Wasp, you know, even feed into that, you know, we're ready for this. We are so trying to, you know, grasp at it, you know, going, oh my God, what's going to happen? And they fed us just a little bit with this. And it was awesome to see. I'm glad they didn't reveal all that much with it too.
No. I don't want to know. I want this to unveil itself to me as a, you know, the next chapter and to see what's going to happen. But it's got some, obviously, you know, you can't do a Marvel movie without Iron Man. So we get to see Iron Man. We get to see Tony, we get to see Steve, and we get to see Thor. Those are the three guys, you know, and they've got something planned. At least Steve does. So we don't know what it is yet, but we know he's got something planned. And we know that Scott, going to be interesting to see how he got out of his predicament at the end of Ant-Man, because he was kind of in a bad way there.
Mm-hmm, exactly. He was in the little microverse, and it was a little bit of a surprise to see him out of there. So how did he get through?
Exactly.
And, you know, little does everybody know, in the van was the Fantastic Four or something like that. You know, they're just not revealing that, or the X-Men or something.
Yeah, that's,
God forbid, Deadpool.
That deal still hasn't gone through. That's not going to happen.
People can hope, damn it. So
yeah, well, until they sign, until the clears out and the papers are all signed and everything like that, they're not doing a damn thing with that. So
you mean you're going to tell me they're waiting till the check clears?
And actually Brazil might stop the whole thing from an article I was reading. Not that they will, but there's some stuff going on with Brazil right now that's kind of some bumps to that. So
I haven't heard about that. What's that about?
I read it like a few weeks ago, so I don't know the details, but I did know that some legal stuff between Disney and Fox that affects Brazil might cause a delay and a bump in the acquisitions. So,
wow, that's crazy.
You know? Yeah, well, you know, this is a worldwide phenomenon. So,
oh, trust me, I know, and it's pretty amazing. The one thing I did love about seeing in the preview, you also got to see Clint as Ronan.
Yes, I think that's who that is. It was really brief. So,
yeah. Oh, it was definitely Hawkeye.
Oh, I knew it was. Yeah. So, yeah, we got to see two people who were not in the first movie. Or at least in the last movie. So yeah, we, you know, for all the people who were wondering where was Ant-Man? Where was Hawkeye? Well, we get to see where they are. So, and Hawkeye doesn't look happy.
Well, I'm sure with the snap, his family disappeared.
So. Well, it's probably, yeah, you're probably right. And even so, he's still got reasons to be mad, so.
Oh, exactly. He's mad mostly at Tony, but that's a whole different story. And you know, in this movie, you will see the finally see the reunion between Tony and Steve. So
we may. I mean, obviously, that's one thing we probably hope to see. But Tony's stranded in space, so we'll have to see how that's resolved.
Did you hear people are trying to petition NASA to go rescue Tony Stark?
Of course they are. People care, man. People care.
It's a frippin' movie.
What else is NASA doing? Let me ask you, what else, like, what could they possibly do that would be more important than saving a fictional character from being stranded out in outer space?
You did listen to last week's episode of Earth Station 1, didn't you? With Dr. Scott.
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention while we were recording.
Okay, well, that totally makes sense. So it was interesting, though, because they didn't introduce any true new characters in it. And that was kind of nice because, you know, I didn't want to see what happened with a lot of the other characters, you know, who, you know, might be in the story and everything. You did get to see Bruce Banner in this also.
Yeah, this is not the time to introduce new people because we got another trailer that did that for us.
Oh, exactly. And we might as well talk about that one, too. We got a second trailer for Ms. Marvel.
I mean,
Captain Marvel. Oops.
Yeah, that's not.
Did I slip?
Yes, you did.
You know, she was Ms. Marvel.
You mean
Marvel
Shazam? There was a Shazam preview?
Yeah, it's great. You know,
that's Captain Marvel, right?
Of course he is.
And you see all the people that are still clinging to that. It's kind of sad, really. The only Captain Marvel for me is still the big cheese.
And the big cheese. Yeah, the guy in red. It's like.
Yeah, he's coming. Don't worry.
Oh, I know. And it looks so awesome. I am looking forward to that one.
So, but no, yes, we did get a look, a longer look at Captain Marvel. And yeah, that one has looks like it's going to be pretty exciting. And look, if there was any question as to the nature of is it Brie Larson, right?
Yes, it is.
Whether she can carry this or whether she's right for the role or whatever, the trailer answers it for me. I mean, she looks great. She looks more than competent. It looks, I can't wait to see her story. I don't know a lot about Captain Marvel. I'm not, as people know, I mean, as you'll find out, I'm more of a DC guy. We'll talk all about that a little late later. But I mean, I know a little bit about Marvel, but not in depth. So like, I'm not going to be able to watch, Captain Marvel and go, oh, that's not like the comic. I don't really know I don't know what her origin is. So, I'll be really curious to see and what the difference is between, you know, cause I know that there's been a couple of different Captain Marvels. So, and Miss Marvel and all that kind of stuff. I'm really curious to see this fleshed out in the MCU.
Mm, I'd like to see. Well, I know Jude Law, originally they were speculating, because he's in the movie, and that his character was going to be the original Mar-Vell, who was, you know, the Captain Marvel male version in the Marvel universe.
In the comics, who passed away of cancer, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so... And then Carol Danvers came in and became Captain Marvel. So it's interesting to see, because for a while they didn't know what they wanted to do with Carol Danvers. They made her binary at one point. They made her Ms. Marvel for a long time. And then she became Captain Marvel. And now there's a new Ms. Marvel. Mm. And so it's all convoluted. It's all tied in. And it's wibbly wobbly timey wimey stuff. But Brie Larson does look great as Marvel. So.
But I definitely think for intense, you know, for the purposes of the movie universe, the MCU universe, it'll be pretty much straight. And it's like they're straightforward. And it looks like, I mean, she's going to be a major powerhouse. She's going to be, dare I say, like the big blue of the MCU. Hey, well, like, see what I did there?
Of course. And literally, I'm wondering, you know, they're talking about it that, you know, because there's rumors that some of the originals of the MCU are going to be ending their run with this movie.
And sure.
And so they're talking about Captain Marvel, Brie Larson, you know, basically becoming the big character, and Black Panther, those two being the two bigs for MCU in the next phase. Because right now we don't even know when there's going to be another Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah, a lot of things are up in the air in the MCU. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what this is going to be a big, like really a big moment for, you know, for the MCU as far as what possibly could be ending, what the next chapter is going to be like. You know, this is probably the riskiest thing. You know, every time they do anything in the MCU, it's risky, but this is a big, like, this is a big gamble. But I'm not worried. I'm not worried at all. I have confidence in them. They have done a great job every single step of the way. And I know, you know, I am very confident that the end game is going to be satisfying, and it's going to be cool, and it's going to be fun to watch. There might be parts where it's hard to watch, but it's going to be overall like a great experience, and the experience of the year. And because I dare say, you know, Infinity War was, if not the experience, the movie experience of the year, like one of this year. So I'm guessing that it'll be the same thing next year, and I can't wait.
Exactly. I'm sure it's going to exceed everyone's expectation.
And we get Captain Marvel before that, right?
Of course, we get Captain Marvel in March.
Okay, so we get Captain Marvel in March, then we get Endgame in May. Did they announce the date yet?
Yeah, I think Endgame, I think is
the I think they moved it up.
I think it's still the first week in May, or it might be the last weekend in April.
Yeah, I think someone, I think I heard somewhere where they moved it up a week with this announcement. So, so that was two really great previews. I would imagine that we'll see them on the big screen prior to the Spider-Man movie coming out this week.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to see both on there. And it's just like, Bring it on. Because I'm so looking forward to these movies. You know, it really pissed me off for a while, especially when Stan passed away. And some of these people came out and talked down to comic book fans. Oh, Stan Lee wrote kids' books, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, people who follow comic books or watch these Marvel movies or DC movies, you know, comic books are just people who don't want to accept growing up their kids, you know, big babies and stuff like that. You know, I'm looking at Bill Maher, I'm looking at a few other people, and it's just, it's crazy. And, you know, I think it's kind of ridiculous that, you know, people would put stuff like that down. Basically, you know, I put like someone like Stan Lee as like the modern day Mark Twain, or even someone, you know, he's creating modern, you know, mythology in a lot of ways. You know, these are going to be characters that are going to be around 200, 300, 500 years from now. And Stan created these. No one's going to remember, you know, a lot of the comedians or stuff like that, or people who commented on it. And it's just like, everyone has their thing. And, you know, it just happens that geekiness is popular right now, and comics and movies about it and such. And it's just, it's crazy. And, it, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but, you know, don't put people down, you know, because, you know, people who put people down a lot of times live in glass houses, and, you know, I carry a big rock, so.
Well, real quick before we end this segment about trailers that came out, I know, Mike, that it wasn't all just Marvel stuff.
No, today the new Godzilla preview dropped, and it's the second one for Godzilla King of Monsters. It's the second one of a trilogy that they're trying to make up, and it looks amazing. I was blown away. The first one left me kind of flat, and the Titans are coming to correct, and it's just like, whatever. But this one just was like, they didn't, what they showed was just breathtaking and is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're right. The teaser that was released, I think, for San Diego last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly.
That was just like a real, like, what? This is, what? I don't, it was just hard to grasp. This, in this time I was watching, I don't even care about a plot. Like, I was just like, oh my God, look at Ghidra. Looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And if it was just Ghidra and Godzilla in this, which alone looks like an amazing battle, that would be enough. That's all they need to do. I'm like, that's cool. But no, you've got Mothra, Rodan, and I think there's one other one in there, right? Gamera in there too?
Mm-hmm. Saw Gamera.
So, with those three added in, it's like, oh my goodness. It's like, I don't even want to see humans. Like, there's a lot of stuff of humans in there. I'm like, every time I see the humans, I'm going to be like, yeah, that, just get to the monsters. So it looks like there's more monsters. I hope in the trailer that wasn't like all the footage of the monster stuff we see. Like,
I got it.
Because that was the big complaint about, that Godzilla movie, right, is that you didn't see the Godzilla stuff all the time, like, as much as you wanted. So I'm hoping that they correct that this time and just let them fight.
No, it was pretty awesome. And of course you see Eleven in it also, because she's in this from the woman from Stranger Things.
Yeah, she's great. It's good to see, like, her doing something a little different.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So,
although she really did have an Eleven vibe.
Oh, of course she did. she did, Is anyone out there, So I'm curious to see that. I think that's coming out in June or July. And so
it's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be like, look, it's gonna be an amazing summer. We're already starting to get a lot of previews for what's going to happen next year, so yeah, it's a good time.
Bring it on, my friends, bring it on. And I'm looking forward to other movies I've been hearing about that are coming out next summer, but we'll talk about that at a future time. What did you guys think of the Avengers preview? What did you guys think of Captain Marvel or Godzilla? Please let us know. Drop us a line at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Ashley Pauls with this week's Box Office Buzz. I'm excited because holiday movie season is finally here, and the next couple weekends are going to be super busy with lots of new movies coming out around the holiday season. One of the first ones is a movie I've been looking forward to ever since I saw the trailers, and it's Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. This movie has been getting really fantastic buzz so far, which makes me really happy. The trailers that I saw looked really fun, and I've been really wanting to see a version of Miles Morales on screen. I'd still like to see him in a live-action film someday, but this looks awesome too. It's being headed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were behind the Lego movie, which I really enjoyed. The animation looks really colorful and fun, so I am just super excited to get my tickets. This is one I definitely want to see on opening weekend. Now, a movie I'm a little less sure about is Mortal Engines. I saw a trailer for this one all the way back, I think, with the Star Wars movie last year. Wasn't sure what it was about at the time. Does kind of have an intriguing concept about giant cities on wheels, kind of in a post-apocalyptic setting. This one's getting mixed reviews, which I was honestly a little bit worried about. There's a lot of CGI in the trailers, and I was worried this was one of those movies where the CGI is kind of going to take over. It is written by the same team that worked on Lord of the Rings, so that seems like it would be a positive sign, but like I said, reviews are definitely coming in kind of mixed. So kind of watch this one with your own judgment. Finally, we have a sort of holiday feel-good film, perhaps. Actually, it's Once Upon a Deadpool. I am not fully sure what this is, but I'm planning to see it this weekend, so I guess the marketing plan worked. This is Deadpool actually kind of riffing on The Princess Bride, which sounds kind of funny, and the catch is that it's a PG-13 movie of Deadpool. Now, normally, I would say this isn't necessarily a good idea. The past two ones have leaned really hard on the fact that they're an R-rated comedy, but I actually think there's a lot of potential here to do some really funny stuff because they are limited by the PG-13 rating. I think they're going to make a lot of jokes by the fact that it's been downgraded to a PG-13. And as I understand it, this one will have maybe some new footage mixed in with some of the Deadpool stuff from movies we've already seen. So I think it looks like fun, and looking forward to checking that one out this weekend as well. And that's it for this week's Box Office Buzz. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog, boxofficebuzzab.wordpress.com, and the ESO podcast website. This week's post is going to be breaking down that brand new Avengers Endgame trailer.
Greetings, Starfighters. It's Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast. Join me and the Rusty crew as we break down the latest geeky movie trailers, talk about TV, comics, toys, games, casting news, and all things nerdy. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the ESO Network, and at therustedrobot.podbean.com. The Rusted Robot Podcast, your source for geek since 2014.
The Rusted Robot Podcast. Think about it.
I need never get old. I need never get old. I need never get old.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Now it is time for our Geek Seat segment. And yes, we have a new guest coming to the show. Let us welcome Jamie Jones.
Hi everyone.
Howdy, welcome back to the station. It's been a while.
It has. Things have changed.
Things have changed a little bit, but and I know you've been avoiding the Geek Seat. That's why you didn't want to come back, because you knew that's where we put you. So.
Oh, of course. Yes. It haunted my dreams.
I can understand that. I really can. So for those people who may not be familiar with it, tell us a little bit about yourself and your new comic store.
So I have worked in comics in the Atlanta area for about 5 years now. And I do a lot of programming. I'm the director of comics programming with MomoCon. I've worked with DragonCon. And I have opened up my own comic store in Tucker, Georgia, with two partners, some amazing partners.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the store is Infinite Realities. Who came up with the name? Was that you?
It was a group think where we all threw out names, and then we were like, nope, don't like that one. Nope, don't like that one. so it was kind of a collaboration for all of us.
Gotcha. Is there significance to it, or did it just sound cool?
It sounds pretty cool, but it's also, you know, there are infinite realities, and in comic books, there are infinite realities.
I mean, absolutely.
You've got DC Multiverse, you've got the Spider-Verse now. I mean, they're everything.
That's, yes, I can remember there was a Malibu-verse. That didn't last long, though.
There was an Imageverse too, right? Like whole Top Cow with Darkness and Witchblade.
Yes, yep. I think so. I think all the comic lines have tried. I need to get on that. Yeah, I need to come up with a Tiki Verse, I think.
I think that would work.
Well, tell us a little about the comic store. What? How do you guys manage? Plan to, you know, sort of stay afloat, stand out in this day and age of comic shops?
Well, we want to be a shop that's not like any other. We want to make sure that we take all of our customers' wants and needs into all of our aspects of what we do. It's very important to us to be a part of the community. Tucker has been crazy welcoming. Everybody has been so, so supportive. So we want to be a part of that. So we're offering D&D games for beginners. We're offering workshops. We've had artist signings. We have another artist signing coming up on the 19th with Robert Venditti for Freedom Fighters. Kamikaze will be coming out doing a workshop on how to create your own worlds. This Thursday, we have a Pokemon, learn how to play the game. We just really want to be a community hub and not just a shop.
I think that's very smart. That is actually very smart. I mean, from your background and everything, that you would have no problem with the comic community, the local comic community, because you have strong ties with them, because you've been working, obviously, in comics as well as with conventions. But so I was not surprised in the grand opening to see a lot of, you know, comic people, local comic people there. But I mean, the rest, I was just, you know, I was so happy for you because on the grand opening, it was so packed.
It was like, I used the phrase humbled so much in the past, you know, just week and more than I ever have, but there's no other word for it. It was humbling that so many people came out on a cold, rainy, wet, just miserable outside day to come and welcome our store. It just meant the world.
Yeah, that line. I mean, your feet must have been hurting the next day. I mean, like, because you were there at the register for like all day constantly.
So part of the cool thing about owning a store is you can make some decisions like buying yourself one of those nice mats that you stand on that doesn't hurt your feet.
Yeah, but still after all day.
It, you know, it's really if I didn't own the store, you're right. I probably would have been dog tired. But since I own the store, I'm like, nope, come on, keep it going.
It was just an adrenaline rush.
Different ball game, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I'm really impressed too. I mean, it seems like every other day you've got an event going on there. So, yeah, you are not resting after just having the grand opening. You're constantly having reasons for people to stop by.
Yeah, and again, that's part of what we want to do. We want to be a community hub. Like, I like people, and I like people to come see me because I'm too lazy to go see them. So you have to throw cool things to make people come to me.
It's in a very cool location. Lots of like, it's like right around the corner from like downtown Tucker, which is, I just discovered that just coming to the store afterwards. I was like, wow, look at all this development and all these cool restaurants and everything.
Yeah, there are a couple of cool restaurants. There was a Growler store there on Main Street that hosted a couple pop-up stores that we did before the shop location opened. And getting it was just an amazing lucked out. Chris, one of my partners, has talked very closely with the city of Tucker. And when they knew who had purchased it, because for 9 years it sat with no roof, it was just empty. And they got us in touch with the person who had purchased it that was wanting to lease it. So we were able to get the lease before anything had really been done. So we were kind of locked into that location, but it's an excellent location. Like you said, it's around the corner from Main Street, but it's also directly across from Tucker High School.
Ah, very nice. Yes. Get the kids.
Yes. Get them young. Hook them.
Exactly. Hook them in the comics, just like me.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm a poster boy for that, really. I don't think that's something we want to advertise, but it is good. It is good. And the shop itself inside, plenty of room to grow as you guys go, and then plenty of room to have like all these events that you've been having. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Again, that was one of those things where it's like, we didn't want everything too tall so where you can't reach it and look at it. We wanted people to feel like they could move through the store without, you know, bumping into everybody. We wanted space.
Yeah, you got space and you got light. I love comic stores that are just really well lit. And you've got not only just, you know, well lit, like great lighting inside, but of course with the, like, I don't know, it seems like a lot of the walls are just windows. So you've got a lot of sunlight coming in too.
Yep. The entire side of the one side of the building is just windows. So lots of light there.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Well, it's awesome. I definitely encourage everybody to check it out at least once, if not multiple times. I certainly can't wait to get back over there and see what's left. I know you kind of had to restock after your grand opening. I mean, that was crazy.
Oh yeah. Well, we need another restock already. It's again, it's the best problem to have. Somebody will ask me for a recommendation and I'll go to grab it to give it to them. And I've sold it already. It's like, oh, please be patient. Please. We will get it back. And everybody has been amazing and patient and totally supportive.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Since you've got your own shop and everything, as far as what's going on in comics right now, what are some of the things that you're excited about?
Die came out last week with Kieran Gillen and Stephanie Hahn, and that was amazing. Still keeping up with Doomsday Clock. The Shazam number one was very cool. Still can't wait to see the Guardians of the Galaxy that Donny Cates is bringing up. Really, honestly, though, right now I'm just kind of want to see Into the Spider-Verse because everybody is talking about it constantly.
The movie?
Yeah, and I know that's not technically comics, but like
sure.
Wanders down the spider path and you end up there.
Absolutely. And one of the things I've always, I know that even though that you are definitely, recognize that superheroes are the thing, you are not all about superheroes. There's plenty of independent stuff going on and well represented in the store already, which was nice to see.
And that, again, that's another thing that was really important to me because comics are way more than just the big two. And I love the big two. Don't get me wrong. My pull list is very much Spider-Gwen and Batman and all of that. But there are far more Image titles that I like and Dark Horse. And everybody just keeps trying harder and pushing. And that's been wonderful to see.
So where can people go to find out all about your store?
So you can go to our Facebook. It's Infinite Realities Comics. And that's where we post up most of our events. And it has a link to our website. And our website, we just got our calendar up and running that way. So you can link your calendars to our calendar and then never miss an event.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely have a link in our show notes so that people can check it out. Even if they're not local, they can see what all the fun stuff is about. Cool. Mike, she's primed and ready now.
Well, she's always ready. She's a comic book shop owner, of course.
I do my best.
Would you expect anything less? All right, Jamie, you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Let's do this.
Jamie, what was your favorite geek out moment?
I have to say opening my own store. No, it's
fair. That's fair. Yeah.
It's totally fair.
That's really it. Like, I've had so many amazing experiences in my life just from going to conventions and working in the industry and all the amazing people I've met. But I really think opening my own store kind of wins it.
I could totally agree with that one. What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
So I was at a convention and I had a fantastic evening with some friends catching up and maybe had a little too much, alcohol and social lubricant. And I ended up oversleeping. Well, I was supposed to see about going to this meeting in that morning and having breakfast. And at that meeting that I slept through, Stan Lee stopped in.
Ouch.
So I don't imbibe much anymore because every time I have a drink, I'm like, could have met Stan Lee.
Wow.
That's a pretty disappointing moment.
Especially now, right?
Oh, yeah. Did you ever have a chance at all to meet him or was
that? No. And it was all very theoretical. I could not have gone to that meeting even if I had woken up, but still there's always that what if.
Fair enough.
No.
What if?
Totally fair.
I get it.
I agree with that. What if? What geeks you out the most?
I love going to conventions and meeting the artist whose work I see. Like that's the greatest thing in the world is to be able to tell someone how much their work has affected you. Or, I have customers tell me the books affect them and I like to share that story with the artist because I know I like being appreciated. I imagine the artist would like to hear the things that, the people that they touch that they may never have a chance to ever interact with.
No, totally understand that completely. What turns you geek off?
Oh, gatekeeping.
Do tell for those who don't know.
So you can be a fan. You don't have to know everything to be a fan. You can like Spider-Gwen and not know the significance behind Peter being the lizard, or you can enjoy, Batman without knowing every little thing that Joker's ever done. It's okay to like something and not know everything about it. it's happened to me sometimes. I'll have a customer come in and almost try and challenge me to see if they can, you know, out get me. And then if I don't have an answer, they're like, "Ah, you're not a real fan." I'm like, "Well, I'm sorry that I don't know the exact issue that this happened in, but I'm pretty sure we could talk about 12 or 18 other books that I probably know a little bit more about that." And that's always frustrating.
Understandable. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
So I'm rewatching Buffy right now, and I've gotten to the episode where Willow kind of loses it and goes all sorts of bad. And I would really love to meet Willow and find out how to do magic. That would be really cool. Maybe not even she's evil Willow, but like just Willow. That would be neat.
No, totally understandable. What fictional character would you not like to meet?
I would never want to meet the Joker. Never, never, never. Because that is pure psychosis.
No, totally understand that. Which version of the Joker, though?
I would preferably never, ever, never meet Jared Leto's interpretation.
For all sorts of reasons.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, many, multiple levels on that one. Multiple levels.
What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
I like snicked. I like the word, the alliteration, just the spelling. I just like snicked.
Snicked.
Yeah.
That could work. I like that. Snicked. Okay. That's pretty cool. What is your ideal geek occupation?
Kind of have it.
I was expecting that one. I really was expecting that one.
Because I sat there, because I looked at the questions. I was like, well, I could... Nope, I got it. I own a comic shop. That's kind of... I mean, the other... Like, I would love to work with conventions. I do that. You know, I kind of have all the pretty rad things doing comics-wise right now that I can, and I want to just keep doing better.
No, but, agreed.
Yep.
I could totally see that. What geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
Security at a convention.
Ooh.
God bless those people. They keep us safe. They let everybody have a good time without worrying about safety. But dear Lord, the things that they have to go through, that's not for me.
No, totally understand that.
Yeah, we've completely heard from people say, like, you know, cleaning up after a convention. But yeah, I don't think that's the first one. But yeah, security, that's a tough job.
I mean, yeah, and it's not even just like the grody and weird stuff. Like if something goes wrong, you know, you have to be there. And that's, I don't like that level of responsibility. I like other levels, but not the ones where people's lives might depend on me.
Nope. Totally understand that. All right, Jamie, are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
All right, let's do this.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
That my store celebrates its 50th anniversary and we pass it on to the next generation of kids and we go live on our yachts. That's pretty rad for me.
I see nothing wrong with that. That is pretty darn awesome. And by that time, you know, 50 years from now, you know, there'll be space yachts. So it'll be even better.
Oh yeah. And we'll be cyborgs. Like we'll be replaced parts of ourselves by then.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Little piece there, little piece there, little piece there. That's pretty darn awesome. Congratulations, though, Jamie. You've made it through the geek seat. Yay!
Woo! Huzzah!
Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $60.08.
Yay!
So we are very, very, very excited. And yes, I know Mike hasn't seen the store yet. So
I've seen it through pictures, though.
Sure. But you got to go in it and experience infinite reality, man.
Well, I'm going to be down there next weekend.
Yeah. So.
It even sounds like something that the dude would approve of.
Of course, man. It's awesome.
It abides. Infinite reality abides.
It's really awesome. I used to live over in Clarkston, so you were the. I used to drive by where you are now all the time on the way home, and it was like, wow, that's a good location. When I found out where you guys are, it's going to be awesome. I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I said, we'll have a link in our show notes so that people can check it out for themselves. But in the meantime, thanks so much. And yeah, we got to have you back on sooner than later.
Anytime.
Awesome.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with The Art of Jim Aparo. Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as a dollar a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always, but now you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign up for the ESO Network, Patreon's easy. All you have to do is click on the link on the top navigation of the ESO Network website or go to patreon.com/ESO Network. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
Like a dream, you try to remember, but it's gone. Then you try to scream, but it only comes out as a yawn. When you try to see the one beyond your front door.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Earth Station One podcast. Now it is time for the artist spotlight, and we are looking at Jim Aparo, a true legend.
Yeah, Jim Aparo is one of those names that if you're probably not that familiar with comics, you probably have not familiar with this name at all. But if you are familiar with comics, particularly DC comics, in the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know who Jim Aparo is. And yeah, this is a true spotlight because we are really shining this spotlight on him because I think he deserves it very much so. And to talk more about Jim Aparo and some of his work over the years, we have a couple of returning guests to the station. First, let's welcome Kevin Eldridge from the Flopcast.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Howdy, sir. It's nice of you to join us. I know you're a big DC Comics guy. So
absolutely. I was a DC kid, and so Jim Aparo's work was a big part of my childhood.
Absolutely. I knew that would be the case. I'm glad to have you join us for this. And we also have with us, usually he's here for music, but it turns out that Ricky Zero is also a big comics guy, too.
That's right.
Welcome back to the station, sir.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So we'll start with you. What was do you remember your first kind of acknowledgement or the first time that you were exposed to Jim Aparo's work?
Not knowing that it was Jim Aparo, I just used to read so many DC comics that he had done, and I didn't realize it was him. Even when I started paying more attention to who the artists were, I thought a lot of his work had been done by Neil Adams. So even I didn't recognize Jim Aparo for all that he had done until years after I had been enjoying his work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was so early for me as well that I didn't know anybody's name who was an artist, you know, really. And so it took me a while to learn who everybody was. And of course, yes, you make a good point with bringing up Neil Adams because he was like the big Batman artist and the big DC artist that came through and kind of changed the look of Batman and a lot of DC characters as well, and made with such a splash. And then Aparo kind of followed him on a number of books, but yeah. It almost seemed like he was like an understated, like a less glamorous Neil Adams in a lot of ways. But I think over the years, most of us are more familiar. I'm actually more of a fan of Aparo's work than I am of Adams at this point.
I don't know that I would say for me that I'm more of a fan of one or the other, but I know when I first started reading comics, I didn't think about the writers or the artists. None of that mattered. I just was concerned about the stories and the characters. And, you know, that was as a little kid. And over the years, as I did start noticing who was doing what, I think it must be a case of the first few times that I looked to see who the artist was, it was Adams. And Jim Aparo's art was so similar that I just assumed that it was Adams moving forward and didn't even bother to look. And then when I realized, no, wait a minute, this was a different guy, I realized that Jim Aparo had really done a ton of the work that I had credited in my head to Adams.
Mm-hmm. Ricky, Kevin, what about you? What was your first? Do you remember your first exposure to Jim Aparo?
You know, I think I can trace it back to the exact issue, which is my first Jim Aparo comic book, and I'm looking at it right now. I still have that original comic. I'm pretty sure that now there's a chance I saw something earlier than this, but I know that it's one of the first Aparo comics, if not the first one I ever got, was The Brave and the Bold, number 151 from 1979. This is Batman and Flash together. And it's definitely 1979 because the story is called Disco of Death.
And I'm sorry, who's teaming up with Batman in that one?
The Flash.
The Flash. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think it was, Brave and the Bold was such a staple for me.
Me too. I'm a big fan of the Brave and the Bold stories. And a lot of those were Jim Aparo, even though Neil Adams has so much fame for that redesign of the Green Arrow stuff.
Yeah, that's absolutely. That's the series, even though he did a bunch of series and long runs on several different series. But Brave and the Bold, that's the first thing I think of when I think of Jim Aparo. And the similarities to Adams are there to some extent, although Aparo certainly has his own style. And Aparo had such a much longer association with the character than Adams. You know, Adams had very influential, important contributions to Batman, certainly with Ra's al Ghul and the coming out of the post-Adam West era, making a serious interpretation of Batman. And Aparo came in the wake of that. But Aparo drew so much Batman through the 70s and 80s. And Brave and the Bold, he started drawing around Brave and the Bold number 100 and right up through the end. It ended with number 200. And he drew almost every issue for that 100-issue run.
Mm-hmm. He did. And because with me, it was Brave and the Bold also, but a lot earlier. I was looking possibly around issue 100 when it was Batman and Robin teaming up with Green Arrow and Green Lantern and Black Canary.
And
because I remember seeing all those characters together, it's like, oh, I love it. I didn't even realize who Jim Aparo was at the time, though.
Those Brave and the Bold stories, most of them through the 70s, written by Bob Haney. And Bob Haney kind of has this reputation as his stories were just nuts. So it's really a testament to the storytelling ability of Aparo that he had to take these wild Bob Haney scripts and turn them into a story that kids could have a fighting chance of following.
He did not care. Bob did not care about continuity.
Not at all.
Not only did he not care what was going on in the other Bat books or whatever the other heroes were doing that he was teaming up with Batman that month, but it wasn't even consistent from like issue to issue. So,
There were some continuations.
I mean, it wasn't crazy. True. Like, you know, it wasn't an unfamiliar Batman. You weren't reading it going, but I mean, I think where he excelled is he got the heroes down to their essence and he told fun stories with them so that if you didn't know who, like some of these characters were, like, you know, Manhunter or, like a lot of the team ups, Blackhawks, and plus he would stretch it out. Like there would be, premises where, you know, either Batman would go back in time or share this sort of, like, I think there's one with, Sergeant Rock, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Which is just crazy. The one that I remember, the earliest one that I can remember, is one with, it had Batman, Green Arrow and Adam, with Joker and Two-Face in it. And mm-hmm. it was an epic, I think it's a two-parter. And I had that first part, and it's just amazing. And to this day, not only have people asked me like who my favorite Batman artist is, like when someone says Batman, like I instantly hear Kevin Conroy's voice, but I see Jim Aparo's artwork.
Oh, yeah, I could totally see that because he's so well associated. Not only did he do Brave and the Bold for Batman, but he also did the actual Batman series. He also did Batman and the Outsiders. Yeah. You know, he did Detective so Comics. Much Batman.
He did.
Exactly.
One of my favorite miniseries was Untold Legend of the Batman.
Yes.
He did all of that. And, like, yeah, I mean, you turned around, he was... okay, so I'll pause for a minute before asking you guys some more stuff about him. But I just wanted to mention too that I had over the weekend I had the honor of meeting Denny O'Neill for the second time ever. He was being honored at the Jimmy Carter Center here for his contributions to writing comics socially as well. And I got to talk to him a little bit. And since, you know, I knew we were doing this episode, I asked him, I said, do you have, you know, if I say the name Jim Aparo, what does that mean? And his face lit up and he said, Jim Aparo is my favorite artist to work with. He said that, he always had his, as an editor, he always got his books done on time. And this was a guy who penciled, inked and lettered his own work. Denny worked with him at Charlton before DC Comics. And he said, you know, he was a great storyteller and he had no ambitions to write whatsoever. In fact, he thought it was the artist's job to interpret the writer's vision rather than try to add and write him themselves. He actually, I guess, couldn't understand why artists would want to write their own material. Like he to him, the best part about the job was getting a script and bringing it to life. And I can't think of too many other people that just did it better than he did. So, and so that's coming from Denny O'Neill. And so that I wanted to get that out right away because that was pretty amazing coming from, you know, coming from somebody who was right there, in those years of DC Comics and Marvel as well. But I don't think, yeah, Jim never did anything for Marvel, correct?
No, he did stuff for Charlton though.
Yeah. He worked for Charlton. He came in with Charlton. And to be honest, I don't think I have any of that stuff. Has anybody gone back and read any of his Charlton work?
His Captain,
I don't think yeah. I've seen very little of it, a little bit though. Charlton is fascinating. That we could do a whole show about Charlton Comics, but Charlton Comics was Connecticut based, and Jim Aparo was a Connecticut guy, so he was actually geographically in the right place to start working for Charlton. But they just did everything, and so his Charlton work is romance books and westerns and supernatural thriller kind of stuff and science fiction plus superheroes, Nightshade, and a little bit of that kind of thing. Yeah, Charlton Comics was formed by two guys literally who met in prison, and Charlton the other big difference in Charlton had their own printing press. It was a building with the actual printing presses where they printed the comics. That was when DC and Marvel publish a comic book, it actually gets printed somewhere else. It's not printed at DC or Marvel. Charlton was its own in-house printing press, and they just cranked out books all the time because they just needed to keep those presses running. And that's why you got such a amazing output of just not always the best quality stuff, but quantity. They just churned out product in Connecticut, but they had some talented people working there. And yeah, that was Dick Giordano. It was Dick Giordano when he moved from Charlton over to DC. He pulled some of the best artists and writers with him, people like Steve Skates, and Jim Aparo came along as well at that point. And that's when he went on Aquaman.
Yeah. Denny mentioned that he knew of Jim. I think the first thing he saw from Jim was Jim's work on the Westerns. And he's like, wow. And he did a couple stories with him over there. And then you know, obviously when Jim came to DC Comics, their paths crossed on the Bat books several times. But Dick Giordano was the guy who, I guess, gave Jim his first job in comics, as well as brought him over to DC. And it's funny because Jed, and it's a shame because I wish I'd gotten a chance to meet Jim. So I don't know too many stories of what he was like, his personality or anything, but he seems to be a very straight up guy and a very loyal guy. I mean, he joins DC in the late 60s and stays there for the rest of his career. Really.
Yeah. I don't remember ever seeing him at a convention or appearing at convention. So I don't think he was really a convention guy. And so most of us probably never really had a chance to meet him. I do remember being surprised by his age at the time that he died, because he was 72, I think, when he died, and he was a lot older than I thought he was. And that's because he was relatively late in life when he got his break into comics. He was in his mid to late 30s when he first started working in comics, which is unusual. So he's kind of like, his age doesn't really match the generation of creators that he was a part of.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. So maybe he brought some maturity with him, and that's kind of affected his work as well. I just know that...
Worked in advertising, and he had a level of professionalism that when you speak about Denny O'Neill or any editors who worked with him, this was your dream employee, to have a guy like Jim Aparo who was professional and consistent and reliable and was turning in completed comic book art pages, as you said, with penciling and inking and lettering. That was so unusual. Nobody does that. Yes. You know, that's absolutely amazing that's the way he preferred to work, is he would do the entire finished page.
Yeah. It's all Aparo. Like, it's just when you get an Aparo book, like, you know, at least during that time, late 60s, 70s, 80s, I mean, it's all him. I mean, certainly later on, he gets some inkers and letters and all that kind of stuff. But so when he gets over to DC, you know, he starts with Aquaman, and then he moves over to the Phantom. And I know that's been collected. I know his Phantom stuff has been collected, but I haven't got a chance to read any of that. Have you guys?
Phantom or Phantom Stranger?
No, the Phantom and then Phantom Stranger.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So,
well, the Phantom was that was still Charlton, the actual Phantom character from the comic strips. Yeah,
that's good.
Oh, gotcha. You're right. I'm sorry. I thought, for some reason, because I know there was a while where DC had the Phantom as well. So yeah, I got
that was, kind of, yeah, that was got much confused. Later, I think. Yeah. They did the Phantom like around the late 80s, early 90s, I think, with Peter David.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he did both in the late 60s. He did the Phantom and he did the Phantom Stranger for DC.
I've recently, yeah. I mean, I did acquire the showcases with his work, and it's one of those ones it starts off like with Neil Adams, like kind of setting the tone for what the characters look like, and then Neil goes off and does whatever Neil does, and Jim like takes over and just makes it his, really.
In a lot of ways, yeah, and it was just amazing because he took so many chances with it, and it was not just a straight up superhero story either, and his angles and his perspectives he chose to use with the characters were awesome. You didn't see stuff like that in comics a lot. You know, you saw the standard superheroes, you know, drawn by people like Kurt Swan and, you know, stuff like that. And it was just, you know, it was neat to see. And then he took it even to the next level, even more so when he went to Adventure Comics and he took over the Spectre.
Yeah. I just finished reading his Spectre run that he did, which didn't last very long. You can get it in one trade. And it actually ended prematurely back in the 70s, so they finished it later on, that's some gruesome stuff. That really is some gruesome stuff.
Shocking series, and just that kind of all-powerful revenge seeking you know, godlike character of the Spectre, and just gruesome, horrifying things that Spectre would inflict upon all these criminals. Just it's even today, like, you can't believe they did that in the early 70s.
Mm-mm. And it was interesting because they took, you know, a golden age character who, you know, was, you know, an undead superhero basically in the 1940s and early 50s. And then he popped up every once in a while as this godlike character.
He was kind of goofy.
In the Justice League, Justice Society crossovers. Yeah, he was goofy.
He got kind of goofy. And then it was, I can't remember the name of the...
The writer was Michael Fleischer.
Michael Fleischer,
he just
right.
died a few months
so,
ago.
So, yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that. And he, and yeah, they together made it. I mean, and this is after, like all the stuff about, hey, you know, comics shouldn't be for, adult or, you know, comics are for kids and you shouldn't put all this stuff in there. And then it got, but, and the code is on all these, the comics code are on all these, books, but man, they are gruesome. Like, and the plots are just so simple. They're not really that intricate. It's basically somebody, some criminal does something bad and Jim Corrigan turns into the Spectre and I mean, destroys them in ways that are just gruesome. Like in one, he takes a giant pair of scissors and cuts a guy in half. And they're
Of course. It's just amazing. It's very gruesome. But he also did a lot of work also with the House of Secrets and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it was just amazing, the stuff. You know, he was not beyond doing horror comics. And these were pretty amazing stories that he drew.
Well, even when Aparo was first trying to get into comics, he tried to work for EC. Like the old Tales from the Crypt, you know, that run in the 50s, and he could not get hired by them. So, and again, he it took him a long time. You know, that was when he would have been in his early 20s trying to work for EC and getting rejected. So he was certainly...
I don't know what his stuff must have looked like then, but I can't imagine.
So he was certainly, certainly did a lot of horror and was very comfortable doing this kind of really gruesome, disturbing stuff.
Now, Ricky, you kind of sprung up there when we mentioned House of Mystery, House of Secrets. We might mention that. Are you familiar with some of those stories?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm most familiar with his work in Brave and the Bold, Aquaman, and Batman. But whenever I see his stuff from those comics, the horror comics that he did, that's some of my favorite work that he's done. I mean, I obviously love the Batman stuff, but that horror stuff, he really seemed like a great choice for an artist for that stuff.
I want to spend obviously some time on Batman, but before we get to that, because Brave and the Bold will lead right into that, really. But I have to, in addition to him being the artist that I think of. When I think of Batman, he is the artist that I think of when I think of Aquaman. He is not Jason Momoa, not at all. But I've mentioned on this show quite a few times, I think. So probably this is no news to anybody who's listening to our show. But I didn't collect Aquaman 100%, but I mean, all the time. But it was an issue of Adventure Comics. It was 452 that attracted me because it had on the cover Aqualad versus Aquaman. And I like a good, you know, hero versus hero story. Plus I was familiar with the Titans at the time. So I was like, oh, it's got a Teen Titan in it. You know, it's a quote unquote novel length sea spectacular. How can I not get this? So I'm expecting it, and it's got Manta, you know, Black Manta is the bad guy. And so I'm like, I'm all in. So I read this story, and in it, spoiler, Aquababy dies. like Arthur Curry's kid dies in this book. And it just shook me to the core. I did not know that was a thing that could happen in comics. That the hero would not win the day. Like his son died, and it really like blew my mind and really affected. I at that point I knew that anything was, you know, possible in comics. And it's eloquently drawn by Jim Aparo. I mean, the storytelling in this particular issue, I would rate up with it's one of the best comics I've ever read. I mean, it was so impactful for me because even though, yeah, I knew Aquaman, I knew him from Super Friends and everything like that, but I wasn't fully invested in Aquaman, nor was I invested in his family. But by reading that issue, I mean, it blew me away. And so I definitely encourage, I know it's a spoiler, but I know, but I mean, if you get the trade, it's called Aquaman Death of a Prince, and it's got, you know, Arthur Curry Jr.'s gravestone right on the cover. So it's not like it's a spoiler. it's not like it's a secret, but I definitely recommend people check out that particular story and that run that he did on Aquaman, because it's incredible. I mean, he had to draw so many different kinds of fish. He must have got sick of it.
Well, if you think about it, he's written almost or drawn most every one of the DC Universe characters.
Yeah, it's.
But his work on Aquaman was beautiful.
Those Aquaman stories, and yeah, the death of Aquaman's son and Mira's son. Again, it's like the Spectre stories. It's like, I can't believe they did that. I can't believe they were allowed to do that. And like you thought the Spectre stories were dark. Now look what they did in Aquaman. But Aquaman was really blessed with such strong art for such a long time, all clear through the 60s, with going from Ramona Freyden to Nick Carty and then to Jim Aparo. So for sort of someone who's considered a kind of B-level DC hero, just wonderful art for such a long stretch. And it's by the 70s, the series was kind of lurching along. It got canceled and then restarted and then canceled again. Then they did the run in Adventure. But they seem to have trouble really maintaining that audience once the 70s got going. But the art was always excellent the whole time.
Yeah, little did I know back then in 1978 when the little Aqua Baby died. They called him Aqua Baby.
Yes, they did.
He was five. Like, I would be like, I'm not a baby anymore. I'm five. But little did I know that 10 years later he would take out, you know, another young hero too. With everybody like looking and participating and voting on that term. Anything else we want to say about Aquaman? I know that Ricky, you said that you were a fan of his Aquaman work too.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, just amazing art.
Yeah. I mean, it's not easy to draw. Like, and it's just not easy. Like, cause he's never like just standing there. He's always moving. There's always fish around. Right. There's always like, there's this fluidity to it. It's really like, it's a challenge for an artist, I would think.
I would think that Aquaman, even though you think of Aquaman, you think of Batman, they're part of the DC universe. They're characters that people of our generation are all familiar with from Super Friends, the Mego toy line, or if you're a little bit younger, the Superpowers toy line. But when you really think about the comic books, the character poses and all of the backgrounds for those two characters are so completely different. It's just different worlds. But he did a great job with both of them.
When you think that he was following Neil Adams on Batman and he was following Nick Carty on Aquaman. So you're talking about, you know, if you were going to rattle off who were the greatest illustrators in the history of comics, those are two names that would be way near the top of that list. And Aparo, his work was up to the task.
Yeah, it combined two different artistic styles into one style without feeling like you'd gone anywhere. And that's really impressive.
I think that's what I would put, and to me, I connect with Aparo's work a little bit more. Sometimes when I see, now even going looking back, I see Neil Adams' work and it's very fluid. It's very like, of course it's, you know, he's got all the muscles on all the folks and everything like that, but it's a lot looser than Aparo's work to me. And I like it. I'm not dissing it at all, but there's a tightness to Aparo's work. And I have to give him credit. Here's where Aparo really, really is amazing to me, is that When I look at his work on Phantom Stranger, when I look at his work on Spectre, and when I look at his work on Batman, these are three characters that have no pupils, right? their faces, their eyes are white, just white, like little bops of little white dots. And yet, you know, they say, at least in acting, they say that the character is all in the eyes, right? If you cover up the eyes, then you know, what are you going to work with? Well, I mean, it's sort of similar with artistic art as well. And there was no doubt, like with Aparo, like the expressions on faces, there's no doubt what people are feeling, what characters are feeling, whether it's rage, confusion, love, what have you. I mean, Aparo is able to convey all of that. And a lot of times with characters with no pupils.
Right. And I'll add something to that. Not only did he do such a great job with the characters, and especially the ones with no pupils, but I think he did an amazing job with his layouts and with his camera angles, so to speak. He could make Batman breaking into somebody's office, which, you know, it's a superhero who's not fighting crime. He's not flying. He's not swimming. He's a guy in an office, but he could use angles and layouts that made it interesting and dynamic.
Well, the other thing with him also, just his facial reactions and such. The scene where Batman found a certain character blown up, you felt for it. You saw right on Batman's face, the emotion was just truly breathtaking. And it was amazing. And Aparo caught that perfectly.
Yeah.
The death in the family storyline, his Joker is terrifying. The sequence where he, you know, the sequence where he beats Jason Todd to death with a tire iron is brutally, like, I mean, we talked a little bit about his horror, like he, the fact that he's able to tell all these horrific things with his panel work and do it in a way that, you know, doesn't violate the code. He's not showing anything. Because I think with the panels, you just see the Joker kind of lift it up and lift it back down. Like he just like thrusts it down. Like you don't see what he's hitting, but it's apparent what he's hitting. And it's haunting. Like that sequence did give me nightmares for a while.
Oh, I'm sure it was so powerful. It was just like, wow. And his Joker, to this day, for me, he's what I associate how the Joker looks, with the long face. And it was almost cartoony, but it was a scary cartoony type look for the Joker that he did.
Yeah, I like his Joker work as well. I like, you know, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, he's working facial expressions with characters with no pupils or whatever. But I also really like what he does with hair. I was especially noticing that when I was rereading some of the Aquaman stuff. Like, he just does, like, he's able to tell, like, you can sort of see the movement. Like, his characters move in the panels. They're always moving. And you can tell by little things like with what the hair's doing, and it gives the characters, like, I think, just a something else where you're it just keeps you moving forward when you're reading the book. I really appreciate that. Like little things like that, I really appreciate. And I think I feel sort of similar with his work on Brave and the Bold, when that issue with Oliver Queen in it with Green Arrow, because he kind of had some fun with that hair as well.
Oh, there are 70s comics, especially a lot of those Brave and the Bold with they'll have, you know, people with all the curly hair, and, you know, hair got a little wacky in the 70s and it shows. And he did, because I think a lot of comics artists will just have a standard type of hair and just a generic adult haircut. Bang, there you go, that's what you're going to get. Whereas he'll have crowd scenes and things and really mix it up and show different kinds of characters. That said, his his faces are very recognizably Jim Aparo faces. When I'm at a glance, if he drew the cover of a comic book, I recognize it instantly as an Aparo. Then you kind of glance, oh yeah, there's that little JA signature down in the corner, but it's so recognizable. And one of the things that I always noticed about his work too, is that a lot of like straight ahead shots of faces, that the face will be looking direct, you know, face directly out at the reader, more so I think than most other comics artists, because I think a lot of artists tend to almost always go for sort of that three-quarter view, which is a little easier to draw because it doesn't have to be perfectly symmetrical. But a lot of Aparo characters will be facing straight ahead. That was one of his favorite angles to draw people from. He'd mix it up, of course, but you'll see a lot of those straight ahead angles, which are a little, yet they have to be precise. You have to draw perfectly if that's how you're going to draw your face.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I'm just picturing, like, you know, several instances where, man, you can always tell his Batman would be like so mad. Like when Batman was mad and he'd point at people and just be like yelling at them, like Aparo would capture that so beautifully. I have to say, I mean, here we are talking about like all the men he did. I mean, he's not an overly, you know, romantic artist when it comes to like the female form. Like, it's not like you would ever say, oh, Jim Aparo is one of the best pinup artists or whatever. I think he serviced women characters very well. But it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a thing for him. You know what I mean?
No, he could certainly do it. And again, he drew a lot of romance books for Charlton. So he would draw women when he needed to. And Nightshade was a woman superhero character at Charlton as well. I think it was just those were the assignments he was getting at DC. It was mostly men stars in it. But whenever there was a woman to be drawn in it, he could certainly do it. And again, like when as I mentioned, like those kind of straight ahead shots of the characters looking straight out, he'd always, not always, but often his women, he just put a couple little dots just to indicate the nose. So he had these kind of shorthand cartooning tricks that he would do to convey faces with just a couple of quick brush strokes very effectively. We haven't touched on the Outsiders yet, of course, but when we get to the Outsiders, obviously then he's drawing, you know, Halo and Katana and a lot of women characters like that.
Well, yeah,
exactly.
What I'm saying though is that he didn't over sexualize.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a great segue, Kevin, because I was just about to say, you know, after Brave and the Bold, he goes, Brave and the Bold ends, which I was so sad that it ended. And then I got the first issue of Batman and the Outsiders, and I thought it was okay, but I didn't stay with it. I am not a huge Batman and the Outsiders fan, I will admit. So if you guys were, talk a little bit about Batman and the Outsiders, because that was a huge run, actually, for a number of years.
Yeah, and that was an era. I mean, that this was when the New Teen Titans were the biggest book at DC. So I think the thinking was, let's do another team book and kind of Brave and the Bold, I think, felt kind of outdated at that time. Even the name, the Brave and the Bold, that was a really old-timey sounding title. So they thought, let's wrap that up. And the team-up concept is a little gimmicky. So let's just do another team book and maybe it'll be a big hit like Teen Titans. And it was very successful for quite a while. It got that sequel book without Batman, just called The Outsiders. So they made that very smooth transition with
on the Baxter run too.
Yeah. They did the Baxter run, which was just called The Outsiders without Batman. So it was a smooth transition from Brave and the Bold to Batman and The Outsiders with the same team. It was Mike Barr. At that point, Bob Haney was out of the picture by then, but it was Mike Barr and Jim Aparo. So Jim Aparo has co-creating credits on characters like Geo-Force and Katana and Halo and Looker, the original characters that were put together for that team. It was a weird book in that it was such an odd assembly of characters, that the existing characters were Metamorpho and Black Lightning as well. And it just seemed odd for Batman to be the leader of this very diverse, eclectic group of heroes. But that said, obviously the art is great from Aparo. Mike Barr is a terrific writer and the stories hold up. I reread the entire series a few years ago and the villains are crazy and goofy, but it works. It's actually a fun read.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the characters were a nice mix with each other. And it's kind of neat because you've seen, you know, of course you have Black Lightning on TV now, but you also had Kitana both in the movies and on TV.
Mm, that's right.
So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see these are characters partially created by, you know, Jim Aparo.
Yeah.
And so it's neat to see, and these are very, you know, fun characters, deep origins, and it's, you know, it's neat to see what they've done with them. And you had, you know, Aparo, you know, because Batman the Outsiders also blended very well into the early years of the New Teen Titans too, because Geo Force and Terra were brother and sister.
Yeah, and that, they were created independently, but then I think Mike Barr and Marv Wolfman, in discussing things around the office, realized that they had these two similar characters being developed. And so then they said, well, let's tie them together, which they did very cleverly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Well, I at some point I probably will revisit Batman, the Insiders because Outsiders, because I definitely, you know, obviously for nothing else, the Aparo art, but, yeah, like I said, it wasn't my thing. Like I was really confused back in the early 80s because Batman had quit the Justice League. He had ended Brave and the Bold. He ended World's Finest. He was just like, I don't want to work with anybody. And then he formed the Outsiders. And I was like, who's this group? And it just confused me. So, but a few years later, Bat Books, Jim Aparo returns, teams up with Jim Starlin, does 10 Nights of the Beast, does Death in the Family, then Lonely Place of Dying. And then, of course, you know, that leads into eventually Nightfall and all that kind of stuff. And Aparo's just right at home, just working his ass off and delivering the goods every month, I think. Big things happening in this book. We've already mentioned Death in the Family. I think 10 Nights of the Beast is pretty awesome as well. Anything from this period that you guys wanted to mention?
I actually had by this point given up a lot of Batman, so I don't know this era that well.
Ah, yeah, this is when Tim Drake comes in, and pretty exciting stuff. I was all over this stuff. Death in the Family was really big deal for me, I thought that this, like I said, Aparo was just churning it out. In Detective, Batman, he was, you know, kind of alternating. But yeah, he was the regular artist on Batman when Bane showed up. It was just epic stuff. This is like a lot of people look at, you know, this period where a lot of people get right back into Batman. And I think it's a great time to be a Batman fan, actually. Neither of you guys were in it either?
I really, by that time, I had started moving back to older comics because I got tired of so many crossovers and continued stories that it felt like you've got to pick up so many books to follow what's going on that
there's only so many crises you can watch.
I got to the point where I wanted to pick up a book and read an entire story in one or two issues. And the only way I felt like I could do that was to go backwards and pick up old issues.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I get that. And then after the Nightfall stuff in the 90s, Aparo's just kind of working. He does a run, I think, a short run on Green Arrow.
Oh, yeah.
With Connor Hawke.
Yeah, yeah. That was right after the Mike Grell run. Like Mike Grell.
Yeah, I think it was I think Dixon was writing it.
Yeah, right? Mike Grell ended with number 80. And then, number 81 is when Aparo came on board and had a pretty long run on it as well.
Yep. And then it does some various other things. I think the last thing that I saw by Jim Aparo was a Legends of the Dark Knight story in 1980. I don't know. Is this, no, 2001. It's 2001. It's Legends of the Dark Knight, The Demon Laughs. And it is a sort of Joker, Ra's al Ghul crossover, written by Chuck Dixon with art by Perro. Inks are by John Cibolero, who I'm not really familiar with, but let me tell you, his inks over Perro's artwork looked like just, it blew my mind because I'd never seen Jim Aparo like this. I mean, we've been talking that Jim Aparo inked himself most of his career. So in the later years, he did not. He had other inkers. But this take on Aparo's artwork, I think, was really interesting and really dark. It's a very dark story. If you haven't checked it out, it's I think it's definitely worth a look. It's not really an continuity thing, because it is a Legends of the Dark Knight tale. So, but and it's, yeah, it's got my two favorite Bat villains in it with Joker and Ra's. So it's actually reprinted in the DC Comics Presents Batman: The Demon Laughs. So,
and that was a good run just for me because I could pick up two issues, three issues, and read an entire story again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they were not really in quote-unquote continuity so that the artists could have, the writers and the artists could tell these like insane tales. And stylistically, they could do what they wanted as well.
And there were some really good stories in there too.
Yes, yes, absolutely. That run of Bat Books is really incredible too. I mean, you've got some really great artists on that. Matt Wagner did a run on that book for a few stories, and that, actually, a lot of people did. I don't want to. If we start naming them, we'll be here all night. So, and unfortunately, we can't be here all night because it looks like our time's about up. But I just wanted to, is there anything real quick before we wrap it up? Is there anything from his later work that you guys else want to mention or anything that we haven't mentioned yet that you guys wanted to bring up?
Not for me. Most of the stuff that I'm familiar with is his Brave and the Bold era stuff.
I think one thing from that Brave and the Bold era that I don't think we mentioned was Dead Man.
He did
some Deadman stories as well in the 70s, which were good stuff.
Exactly, and he took over once again for Neil Adams.
That's right.
And it's another guy that has no pupils.
details, my friends.
A lot of his work has been collected. If people can't find his work, it's out there. And granted, he didn't bounce around from company to company. He didn't make a lot of waves. He just kind of did his job and, did it on time, apparently, according to Denny O'Neill, and did it better than I think a lot of other people did. So, I just wanted to give him credit, and I think we'll end this segment by each recommending something that he did that people should check out. Mike, we'll start with you.
Everything.
That's not fair.
I know it's not, but it took over for what you guys had to say. No. Uh-huh. Uh-huh, of course. Now, I would have to say, if you get a chance to read pretty much his run on Brave and the Bold, you get to see him pretty much draw the DC universe right there and teaming up with Batman. And it was just awesome. Characters you never thought you'd see Batman teaming up with in full stories. And it was awesome. And it didn't matter if they were in the past. It didn't matter if they were from the future. It didn't even matter if they were from, alternate Earths, like Earth 2 or something. It was just like Batman and Wildcat, Batman and, and Dr. Fate, Batman and the Flash, the Golden Age. And, it was just awesome to see. And these were just fun stories. And Aparo captured it perfectly. And if you're into the horror stuff, we've talked all about this in this episode. Definitely check out The Phantom Stranger, The Spectre, or The House of Mystery or House of Secrets.
Okay. So everything. So
pretty much. Yeah. I told you everything. Did I lie? No.
Ricky, what about you? Is there anything in particular you would recommend?
For me personally, the work that he did on Brave and the Bold is what I think of first when I think of him. And that's the stuff I'm most familiar with. But every time I see his horror art, I just am blown away again. So for me, I would say for people who are already familiar with The Brave and the Bold, check out the stuff that he did in some of these horror comics that you may not have looked at, because he really did just hit that stuff out of the park. He did such a great job on those books.
I'm looking at his bibliography here online, and one of the books that he did a lot of work on Charlton Comics, two books actually that he did a lot of work on. One of them is Ghostly Tales, and the other is The Many Ghosts of Dr. Graves. And I'm like, I don't know if that stuff's been collected, but I want to read both of those. That's something else I need to look for now, because those sound intriguing to me.
Kevin? I'm not sure about those Charlton stories either. How much of that, if any, has been reprinted? Because some of those things have been, I think, and that if you go really, you dive into the back pages of the previews catalog, sometimes those sort of more obscure Silver Bronze Age comics are being reprinted here and there. So it's possible. If not, that stuff is probably cheap if you can track down the back issues. I'll bet there are beat up reading copies hiding in 50-cent boxes at conventions. As far as what I would recommend from Jim Aparo, as far as what is available, what is in print, I'm just going to say the same thing that Mike and Ricky said, and that's Brave and the Bold. I go back to Brave and the Bold first when I think of Jim Aparo. And they have been reprinting some of his Brave and the Bold material in those new reprint series of DC's. I think there have been two Batman Brave and the Bold omnibus editions now.
Oh yeah, the Bronze Age.
Yeah, Bronze Age, Brave and Bold Omnibus. And yeah, I'm not a big omnibus guy, because those books are just so big that they're kind of uncomfortably big, I think. But right. That you do get a ton of material in those. It's hundreds of pages, and I think the second Bronze Age omnibus for Brave and the Bold goes up through around 1980 or so. So you get pretty deep into the Aparo run. I think the volume 2 actually includes that my first Aparo story, The Disco of Death, I believe you'll find in that one. So you can get them online at a pretty good price for the size, the giant volumes that you're getting. So that's a great way, as Mike said, to sample such a huge hunk of the DC universe, because every single story, they're all done in one single issue. Every chapter of that book will be its own little self-contained story with some fun guest star from the DC universe teaming up with Batman, and all the art is just beautiful.
I am obviously, I can't argue with any of your picks, because they're all awesome and I would recommend them as well. I just want to add to that, especially with the Aquaman movie coming out next week or in a couple weeks. People should check out Death of the Prince, or I think there's another Aquaman omnibus or trade or something that's out as well. These are great stories. And like I said, they're pretty, they can be pretty emotional. I definitely recommend, he did just as much great work with Aquaman that I think he did with, not as much, obviously. Batman was his main guy, but for all the horror elements that are there, I think his work with Aquaman, there's a fantasy element to his work that I think is really cool too. So, I definitely recommend the Aquaman run. Very cool. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it. That's been fun. Spotlighting a guy who probably didn't get near enough credit while he was doing the work that he should have, I think. So, and also point out that there are some Jim Aparo omnibuses out there, too. There's Legends of the Dark Knight, Jim Aparo, Volume 1, 2, and 3. So if you want to get all his Batman run, you can do that, too. So, very cool. Well, thank you so much. And we will be right back with the ESO Network Comic Lounge.
We've come a long, long way together, through the hard times and the good. I have to.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this geek girl is talking about the Avengers Endgame movie trailer. So, we got to see the trailer for the latest Marvel film this week. Actually, we also got to see the Captain Marvel trailer last week, so if you haven't seen that one, go watch that as well. So, we've had a few of our questions answered from Infinity Wars, and even more questions brought up. We see Tony Stark drifting in space, alone. We also see Captain America and Black Widow talking a whole bunch. We get to see that Ant-Man made it back, and we see Hawkeye, or Ronin, or whatever they decide to call him in this, since he was looking a bit distraught. So, time to see if they go the really crazy moody route with him for this film, or how they're going to handle that. We did not see Captain Marvel, who I am guessing we will get in the movie, but they aren't going to spoil that until after her movie comes out in March. So I'm excited to see everything that's going to happen. Either way, I am super, super excited for this film. I want to see what changes will happen from Infinity War, what will actually be permanent, who will come back, who won't. I am super, super excited. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
For the week of December 17th, 2018, this is the ESO Network Con Report.
Howdy, everyone. And yes, here is where you can find ESO Network folks' upcoming appearances and events near you. Starting this weekend, December 16th, the Atlanta Comic Convention is a one-day show that's held at the Marriott Century Center. And Mike and I will be there representing Earth Station One and Earth Station Who, and just ourselves. We don't have an official table there. We're just going to be hanging out all day, most of the day anyway. Mike will be very close to pop figures. So if you are looking for Mike Faber and you see some pop figures, if you stay there long enough, he will be by eventually.
Well, of course I will. You know, where else would I be? Looking at comics? Jeez.
Well, there's a lot of comics to be had, and I'll be looking at those, probably diving into some of the $5 or less trade bins and whatnot. And there's also a lot of good friends of the station going to be there. The award-winning Bobby Nash will be there. Jason Flowers will be there. James Burns will be there. Guys who've been on the show, they're friends of the station. There's a lot of talent in that outside room. So I definitely encourage people to come check it out. Been a lot of cosplay at this one-day show, too, over the course of the last years or so. So I definitely encourage people to come by. If you're going to be there and you want to say howdy to us, since we don't have a table, make sure you message us. Let us know you're going to be there. We'll arrange a time, or we'll just tell you when we're going to be there, and hopefully we'll see you, because it's a great show. It's a nice one-day show. It's pretty casual. It's right before the holidays, so if you're looking for that special something, that whether it's a back issue or just a stocking stuffer or some piece of art that's an unusual gift, a unique gift, I should say, you can get it at the Atlanta Comic Convention on December 16th. Then that's it for the year, man. 2018 is in the books. We've already got a couple of dates for 2019 already, though. January 25th through the 27th is Chatticon. Guess where Chatticon is, Mike?
Would that be in the lovely city of Chattanooga, Tennessee?
No, it's in Miami. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually in Chattanooga, which is a great town in Tennessee. And the Vitamin Geeks are going to be at the Chatticon. They actually will not only be attending, but they are actually going to be participating in panels. Yeah, they actually gave me my they gave me their panel list, and I can tell you that the panels that they're going to be featured on, one of them is called The Wildest Death Scenes in Movie History. That sounds crazy. Another one is Modern Horror Masterpieces, and the last one is Holiday Horror Hoedown. So some of the best and worst holiday-themed horror films of all time. So sounds like a great, great opportunity for them to participate in panels. And if you're going to be in Chattanooga, the guest of honor for Chatticon 44, January 25th through the 27th, is Timothy Zahn. That is the artist guest of honor is Charles Urbach. And they've got a ton of other special guests as well. It's a great show. I've actually heard really good things about it. So check it out. If that's like one of the first conventions of the year. Woo-hoo-hoo. And then in February 15th through the 17th is Inuhule. I'm sorry, I pronounced it wrong again. It's Inuhule. It is, I got to be careful because it is a tricky word. It's one of those tiki words, Inuhule, and it is basically a tiki weekend here in Atlanta, Georgia. It also is at the Atlanta Marriott Century Center, and I will be there representing Tiki Zombie with artist Peter Cutler, and there's going to be a lot of tiki programming, a lot of tours, and of course drinking and bands and rum and fire dancers and ukuleles, and did I mention drinking? There's going to be some of that. It's going to be a great time. I am very excited to participate and be part of this tiki weekend, which Atlanta has not had in a long time. So I'm very excited to be part of that. And that's it, really, for the next couple months. So if you want to know where ESO Network folks are going to be, please stay tuned to this this segment. And if you've got events that you want us to help promote or participate in, please feel free to reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I wanted to thank everyone for being here tonight. Ricky, thank you for staying late for school tonight.
You got it. Thank you for having me on the show. I always appreciate it.
Anything you want to promote, my friend?
I'm just looking forward to the upcoming Tiki Zombie comic.
Really? There's a Tiki Zombie comic coming out?
It is on its way.
Wow. Maybe Santa will bring that to all the good boys and girls out there.
I hope so.
That would be really cool. And Kevin, thank you, my friend.
Anytime you want to talk about old DC comics, look me up. That's what I know. That was my childhood.
Yeah. Obviously, we heard on the Flopcast that you don't watch Doctor Who, so we can never have you on that show.
I'm no use at all on one of your many Doctor Who shows, but DC comic shows, absolutely happy to be here anytime. My plug, as always, will be for my goofy little corner of the ESO network, and that is the Flopcast, where we do a very silly podcast here on the network every week. Our latest episode was all about the Star Wars holiday special, which my co-host had never suffered through before. But
You strapped Cornflake down to make her watch it?
You know, it was her idea to finally watch it, but I did not object. I said, yep, let's do this. You're watching the holiday special. And that's a fun show, obviously, watching that crazy show. And we have slightly more normal holiday-themed shows coming up in the next couple of weeks as well as we dive into the more traditional Rankin Bass type of holiday cartoons as well.
Kevin, I thought you were her friend. God.
I used to be. Then along came B. Arthur.
Wow. And a singing Boba Fett.
And Boba Fett.
Wow. Oh, man. But yeah, listen to the Flopcast. They actually have a lot of fun also talking about the commercials that were involved with it.
Way better than the holiday special itself, where the commercials they show during the holiday special. Those are at least as entertaining.
Mm-hmm, exactly. That is
awesome. We break it all down for you this week.
That is awesome. Definitely give the Flopcast a listen, folks. It's a lot of fun. And Mr. Mike, my friend.
As always, it's my pleasure.
And we have congratulations for each other. This is episode 450.
450?
Yes.
My God, that's crazy.
We've done 450 of these things.
Whew. Well, you've done a few more than I have, but damn, that's a lot.
That's a lot of cassette tape.
That's It's a lot of crap we've been recording. I'll tell you that.
Exactly. We've been dishing it out for almost 9 years now, folks.
It's amazing.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, in April, we'll be starting season 10 of Earth Station 1, if you put it that way. God, that's scary to think about. Wow. Anything you want to shout out, my friend?
Well, I got to give a shout out to another person here on Earth Station One who joins us, who will be joining us next week, I believe, and that is Ashley Pauls. We did 4 episodes of Better Late Than Never, which was a blog series that she had done, inspired by Mr. Mike Faber, to get her to see some movies that she had never seen before, some quote-unquote classics that she should see at some point, and it just never had. So she used the last few months to watch 4 movies that people had recommended to her. And not only did she get the blog about it on the ESO Network page, but we also recorded some discussion about it as well, some supplemental discussion, I should say. And those we issued exclusively to our patrons. And it was a lot of fun. So we had a blast talking about Jaws, then North by Northwest, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And we wrapped it up with the movie that Mike suggested. Mike looked at Ashley and said, "What? You've never seen Big Lebowski?" So we wrapped him up with the Big Lebowski with the dude himself. It was a lot of fun. And it was good to talk about some classic movies with Ashley and then see them again through her eyes. So I hope that the series continues. Like we did these 4 and she'll probably do some more at some point, but we're not sure. So if you guys want some more episodes of that, whether by blog or by the patron, let us know and we'll keep doing it.
Well, it was always fun, and I just started teasing her, talking about movies that we had seen that she wasn't even alive for. So that's what led to the whole series.
Well, that's so many. Like, that's most of the motion picture industry, like, really, is that she hasn't been alive for. So
exactly. So, you know, once, you know, she finally just said, I'll do it. So, yeah, I'm already starting to talk to her and whisper ideas for her next round into her ear already.
I think the Big Lebowski was the only movie that came out while she was alive of the 4 that we did.
I think it was. I think it was because that was 98. And I think she was 2 at the time.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that's pretty awesome, though. And Ashley did a fantastic job. So I think that is going to wrap up our episode for this week. Want to thank everybody out there for listening. And, you know, we're going to be coming back to you again next week. And we are going back to the movies already. Next 3 weeks actually is movies, movies, movies. And next week we are going to be talking all about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie review. Should be a lot of fun. We got a great crew lined up to talk all about it, including the who we just talked about, Ashley Pauls. So very cool. So please join us for that episode. We'd love to hear from you. As we like to always say, please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. We will see you here next time. And my name is Mike Faber. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday season, folks. Take it easy. Peace. And we're done. You've been listening to the Earth Station 1 podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station 1 is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.